Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 535, titled Death Trap Part 3, Italian Fascism, Bogus Intelligence in the Iraq War. This is being recorded on November 20th of the year 2005. This program, obviously, is a sequel to Death Traps Parts 1 and 2. The most recently recorded was, For the Record, 527, Death Trap Part 2. In both of the previous two shows, I put forth information in support of my hypothesis that the United States may very well have been lured into a trap in Iraq, lured into a trap by the post-war fascist underground, fascist international, I should say, including and especially the underground Reich. The purpose of that trap ultimately to bring the United States into a long and costly war, draining both in terms of lives, prestige, and most importantly, in my opinion, money. A war that would ultimately weaken and perhaps ultimately destroy the United States. That war may very well pit the United States against the Muslim populations of what the German geopoliticians called the Earth Island. And anyway, that is the working hypothesis that I have presented. In discussing September 11th, in discussing Islamic fascism, and in particular the Muslim Brotherhood and its various offshoots, Bank al-Taqwa, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas, among others, as well as Palestinian Islamic Jihad, we have noted that in the al-Taqwa complex, one finds far more than just Muslims. Indeed, in the al-Taqwa constellation, one finds elements running from Third Reich veterans, including François Genoux, with his remarkable links, not only to elements in the Middle East, but to the far left, as well as to the far right and the Third Reich. One finds numerous evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Italian fascism. We're going to talk about those. And it goes all the way to the royal family of Liechtenstein. So there's a whole lot more going on here than just Muslims, unquote, or Arabs, unquote. It's not to say that they don't play a very important role. They are a critical part of this fascist constellation. By way of illustrating that just how superficially evident and, or I should say readily evident and obvious the Nazi-Arab links can be, as documented in Martin A. Lee's The Beast Reawakens, in the late 90s, Saudi Arabia hired an American neo-Nazi, William Grimstead, as one of their Washington lobbyists, pretty naked, and of course due to the tremendous PR and legal clout of the enormous amount of Saudi oil wealth, not to mention their connections to powerful American elements such as the Bushes, one doesn't hear much about it, but it's there. What we're going to be looking at in this broadcast is, again, how the bogus intelligence that lured the United States into what I believe to be a death trap, just where this came from. Another program to consider in this regard is For the Record 502, called Curveball, about the German intelligence handling of an obviously spurious Iraqi defector, apparently manipulated by Ahmed Chalabi. And that was one of the major sources of the bogus intelligence that lured us into this trap. We're now going to take a look at an apparent Italian connection, and specifically a Seize Me/P2/Alleanza Nazionale milieu link to the bogus claims of uranium yellow cake coming from Niger. That, in turn, was the genesis of the whole Valerie Plame investigation. We're going to take a look at that. We're also going to take a look at an Al-Qaeda defector slash prisoner who also helped to feed us bogus information. As is often the case in my broadcast, this is speculation, but again, noting some of the interesting links here and how once again, what is one of the players in the Iraqi bogus intelligence situation, we've got the old P2 Italian fascist milieu. One of the questions to ask here is whether the P2 milieu, which had previously been part of the Atlanticist and at least up to a point pro-American portion of the fascist international, whether in the wake of the Cold War and now that the Soviets are gone, whether perhaps some elements of the Italian fascist milieu are becoming de-Atlanticized and anti-American, and perhaps they are turning with the underground Reich to help push what's left of the United States into its grave. Certainly what we are going to be refreshing our awareness of are the links between the P2/Alleanza Nazionale Italian fascist milieu and Bank al-Taqwa. Let's plunge right in. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, October 30th of the year 2005, an article by Robert Collier. This is titled, Seeds of Leak Scandal Sown in Italian Intelligence Agency. It reads in part, Behind the CIA leak scandal lies a bizarre trail of forged documents, an embassy break-in, and international deception that helped propel the United States to war in Iraq. While public American attention focuses on Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation into the leak, U.S. and Italian lawmakers are probing a series of bogus claims of Iraqi uranium purchases in Africa that were the opening chapters in a saga that resulted in the disclosure of the identity of CIA officer Valerie Plame. In the past week, the respected left-of-center Italian daily La Repubblica published a three-part series of investigative articles claiming that documents purporting to prove that Saddam Hussein was seeking yellowcake uranium in Niger had been forged by an Italian freelance spy and then were fed by the Italian agency to eager officials in Washington and London. On Capitol Hill, Senator Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, the Senate Democratic leader, and Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts, are asking for public hearings into the forgeries and their role in Bush administration claims that Hussein was developing nuclear weapons. The Italian Parliament is scheduled to hold hearings about the La Repubblica allegations on Thursday, with Intelligence Chief Niccolò Pollari expected to come under heavy grilling. The articles relied heavily on sources in the Italian spy agency, the military information and security agency known as SISMI. They provide a tantalizing account, credible to some observers, baseless speculation to others, of how President Bush and Prime Minister Tony Blair were snookered by fabricated intelligence about Hussein's alleged nuclear program. The allegations in La Repubblica's articles lead far into the murky depths of Italy's intelligence agencies, a realm of conspiracy claims and counterclaims. In Italy, this netherworld is called dietrologia, a word that loosely translates as the widespread belief that political, security, and criminal forces are constantly engaged in secret plots and maneuvers, noted Harry Farrell, a professor of international affairs at George Washington University in Washington, and a blogger on the Crooked Timber weblog, which has dissected the Italian angle to Plomgate. It's hard to say if the La Repubblica information is the truth with some distortion, or misinformation from the officials who were leaking this, Farrell said, but it certainly raises some very troubling questions, unquote. Farrell noted that during the Cold War, the U.S. and Italian spy agencies cooperated closely on undercover work. Bush and Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi are close allies, and Berlusconi has strongly supported Iraq's policy, stationing 3,000 Italian troops south of Baghdad. SISMI has long been accused of involvement in rightist conspiracies, including work in collaboration with Propaganda Due, or P2, a Masonic secret society, and the Armed Falange, a neo-fascist terrorist group. Quote, SISMI does not have an immaculate history at all, said Gianfranco Paschino, a political science professor at the Bologna, Italy campus of the School of Advanced and International Studies of Johns Hopkins University. Quote, It has been purged and reorganized very often. Paschino called SISMI, quote, friendly to the right wing and willing to offer its services for right-wing purposes, unquote. According to La Repubblica, the forged documents were originally produced in 2000 by Rocco Martino, a former member of the Carabinieri paramilitary police who then became a freelance agent for both SISMI and French intelligence. SISMI combined these fakes with real documents from the 1980s showing Hussein's yellowcake purchases from Niger during that period, in the process conducting a break-in at the Niger embassy in Rome to steal letterhead and seals. Soon afterward, La Repubblica reported, Italian operatives passed news of their scoop to the CIA and the British intelligence agency MI6. When the CIA expressed doubt about the veracity of the claims, SISMI began seeking to peddle it directly to the most pro-war faction of the Bush administration. SISMI Chief Pollari met in Rome with Michael Ledeen, an influential Washington neoconservative who has long been reputed to play a back-channel role between U.S. and Italian spy agencies. Pollari also met in Washington with Stephen Hadley, Deputy National Security Advisor, to discuss the new information La Repubblica reported. On Thursday, a National Security Council spokesman confirmed that the Hadley-Pelowry meeting had taken place, but was only a, quote, courtesy call, unquote, with no documents exchanged. In early 2002, CIA officials sent Wilson, who had served as a diplomat in Africa, to Niger to investigate the matter. Wilson reported back to CIA headquarters that the claims were unfounded. Meanwhile, however, MI6 recycled the information and, without disclosing the source, reported it to the White House, which interpreted this Bush echo chamber as independent confirmation of the Italian claims. The elaborate hoax finally succeeded. In late September 2002, Secretary of State Colin Powell cited Iraq's alleged Niger dealings as proof of Hussein's nuclear ambitions. In his February 2003 State of the Union address, Bush declared that British intelligence had learned, unquote, Saddam Hussein had been seeking to buy nuclear material in Africa. Throughout the period, Blair made similar claims. British officials have insisted that they had other evidence in addition to the forged documents that confirmed Iraqi uranium purchases in Niger. The British have declined to show this evidence, however. La Repubblica quoted a Sesney official as saying of this alleged corroborating evidence, quote, "If it ever were brought forward, it would be discovered with red faces that it was Italian intelligence collected by Sesney at the end of the 1980s and shared with our friend Hamilton McMillan," unquote, the top MI6 counterterrorism official during that period. Well, many things to note here. First of all, again, the Sesme was very closely associated, as indicated here, with the old P2 Lodge, one of whose members was Silvio Berlusconi, and with the strategy of tension, neo-fascist terrorism in Italy, and perhaps the neo here is inappropriate because an awful lot of those folks dated back to the original period of Italian fascism. We should note that not only was Berlusconi a member of P2, but there are links between the Italian fascist milieu and the Bank al-Taqwa / Muslim Brotherhood milieu that was deeply involved with the funding of not only al-Qaeda, but Hamas and other Muslim Brotherhood offshoots as well. The Swiss-based lawyer who handled the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi was none other than Pierfelice Barchi, who is the attorney for Youssef Nada, a Nazi spy from World War II, the basic foreign secretary for the Muslim Brotherhood, and the head of Bank al-Taqwa. And we should also note that there are numerous other links between the Italian fascist milieu and Bank al-Taqwa, and some of those links go through the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian fascist party, which is a coalition partner with Berlusconi, and go even through the old Ordine Nuovo fascist terrorist group, one of whose members is an original director and stockholder of Bank al-Taqwa, Ordine Nuovo headed up by Pino Rauti, an Italian terrorist and himself a veteran of the Salò Republic, the SS rump government formed in northern Italy after the capitulation of Mussolini in 1943. Pino Rauti, by the way, a member also of the Berlusconi coalition. Now, again, the Berlusconi coalition was with the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian fascist party, whose head is Gianfranco Fini. And remember, in this whole period, that the Italian foreign secretary, basically, the Italian foreign minister, is Gianfranco Fini, the head of the Italian fascist party. And basically, he's equivalent in this period of Colin Powell. He is their secretary of state. That is more than a little interesting. Also, in terms of luring us into the trap, which I believe happened, I don't think it required a great deal of cunning. It required about as much cunning as setting out a pot of honey in front of a marauding bear. It'll work. The bear will be trapped, but you don't have to necessarily be the shrewdest of big game hunters in order to come up with a stratagem. More about the alleged Sesme link to the yellow cake. San Francisco Chronicle, Friday, November 4th of 2005, article by Elaine Cherlino and Elisabetta Poveledo of the New York Times, Dateline Rome, headlined, "Italian Spy Chief Discloses Source of Forged Documents." It reads in part, "Italy's spy master identified an Italian occasional spy named Rocco Martino on Thursday as the disseminator of forged documents that described efforts by Iraq to buy hundreds of tons of uranium ore from Niger for a nuclear weapons program," three Italian lawmakers said Thursday. General Nico Polari, director of the Italian military intelligence agency known as SISMI, disclosed that Martino had been the source of the forged documents in closed-door testimony to a parliamentary committee that oversees secret services, the lawmakers said. So again, notice the apparent or alleged SISMI role in the genesis of the forged uranium yellow cake documents. And again, bear in mind the Italian neo-fascist / P2 / Alleanza Nazionale links to the Bank al-Taqwa / Muslim Brotherhood / Al-Qaeda milieu. By the way, those can be viewed in, among other programs, For the Record 377, 378, and 456. And listeners are encouraged to use the description for those programs and access the information. What we're going to do now is to review a portion of that. And again, I want to stress that this is a speculative element. By the way, there are other interesting links here, and certainly one group that should be borne in mind, or one element that should be borne in mind, is that the second largest stockholder in Fininvest, that is Berlusconi's media holding company, is Prince Al-Waleed of Saudi Arabia, who is also the second largest stockholder in News Corp of Rupert Murdoch. And he's also the second largest stockholder in the Fox News subsidiary of News Corp. Fox, of course, a major cheerleader for the war in Iraq and a virtual subsidiary of the Bush administration. So the Prince Al-Waleed Saudi link there is interesting to contemplate in this context as well. Now, what we're going to be doing is to reviewing a key paragraph from an essay that was authored by Kevin Coogan, the brilliant author of Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey, and the Post-War Fascist International. This essay is available online. It's called Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa by Kevin Coogan. It was authored in September of 2002. Now, what we're going to be talking about, bear in mind that by the fall of 2002, the entire uranium yellow cake canard was already fully launched. We're going to be taking a look at an interesting meeting that took place in April of 2002 between Ahmed Huber, Swiss-German neo-fascist turned Islamist, and a link between Bank al-Taqwa and neo-Nazi and neo-fascist elements in Europe and North America. Ahmed Huber himself, a protege not only of the Grand Mufti, but of Johann von Leers, who was the director of anti-Semitic propaganda for Josef Goebbels. Now, who was Ahmed Huber, director of Bank al-Taqwa, meeting with in April of 2002? Well, with Jean-Marie Le Pen of the French Fascist National Front, with Franz Schoenhuber, former SS officer and head of the German Republikaner Party, one of the key German neo-Nazi parties, and Gianfranco Fini, head of the Italian Fascist Party and the Italian foreign minister during this whole period of time, basically the Italian Secretary of State. Does this meeting have something to do with the genesis of the bogus intelligence, or the channeling or manipulation of the bogus intelligence allegedly coming through the SISMI / P2 / Alleanza Nazionale milieu? If so, what were they doing? Does this signal at least a switch of allegiance of at least part of the P2 milieu to an anti-American stance as opposed to an Atlanticist stance? Was the pro-Atlanticist stance something of a Cold War realpolitik posture now cast aside with the end of the Cold War? Interesting questions. By the way, for background on what I mean by Atlanticist, check out Kevin Coogan's Dreamer of the Day, a very, very important book, essential for understanding contemporary fascism. It's also a tough read. I also would access in that context some of the German Realpolitik vis-a-vis their Ostpolitik. A great way to do that would be to access the book Germany Plots with the Kremlin by T.H. Tettens, published in 1953. That can be downloaded for free from the Spitfire website. So again, bearing in mind that in this 2002 time period, the yellow cake, the Niger yellow cake canard is taking shape. allegedly coming through the SeizeMe / P2 / Alleanza Nazionale milieu, and that the head of the Alleanza Nazionale and Berlusconi's coalition partner, Gianfranco Fini, again, the head of the Italian Fascist Party, who is also the Italian foreign minister, is meeting with Franz Schoenhumer, Jean-Marie Le Pen, an unnamed American rightist leader, and Ahmed Huber, director of Bank al-Taqwa. Was this related to the death trap? Was this related to the uranium Niger cake? That's the question we're asking. From Kevin Coogan's essay report on the far right, report on Islamists, the far right, and al-Taqwa by Kevin Coogan. Perhaps the most recent remarkable story concerning Huber comes from a brief item in the Swiss tabloid Bleak that in an April 26, 2002 article by Alexandre Sauté that Huber was involved in a meeting of far-right leaders from Europe. A photo showing Huber with Jean-Marie Le Pen accompanies the article. The Bleak story, available on the web, is as follows. Mont Pèlerin, that's the site of the location in Switzerland. Christian Cambuzat, the promoter of the right extremist Jean-Marie Le Pen. The guru assembles together some of the top leaders of the European right. On the idyllic Mont Pèlerin, they debate their crude ideas. At his secret visit to a spa in Switzerland, Le Pen hardly remained alone. Rightist leaders from all over Europe traveled to meet the extremist presidential candidate who was hosted by Cambuzat. Franz Schoenhuber, founder of the Republikaner Party in Germany and a former member of the SS. He talked with Le Pen, who constitutes together with Schoenhuber the Front National faction in the European Parliament. Gianfranco Fini, Italian post-fascist, by the way, that should be taken with a grain of salt. With basically, the Alleanza Nazionale interrupting here, they say, well, we're not fascist, we're post-fascist. I think that's simply so much rhetorical BS, and it's to be taken in the same vein, I think, as the Muslim Brotherhood's profession of democratic sentiments. Like the P2 milieu, in fact, like the Nazis before them, they're willing to use democracy to seize power to the extent that they can, but they will not admit others to using or permit others to use democracy to take it back. So forget about the post-fascist thing. It's like viewing the Muslim Brotherhood as democratic. There are a lot of people naive enough to take that at face value. I'm not one of them, and I hope you aren't either. Once again, Italian fascist, Mussolini admirer, and founder of the Alleanza Nazionale, Gianfranco Fini. He also was at the meeting with Le Pen and Schoenhuber. Ahmed Huber, the Swiss, is on the Bush administration blacklist. Quote, I met Le Pen at Mont Pèlerin as he went to Christian Cambuzat's spa, Huber told Bleak yesterday. At the extremist rendezvous, an American far-right politician was also supposed to have taken part. Note, the American is not further identified. Anyway, so it's very interesting to see these guys gathering in the spring of 2002. Was this related to the uranium yellow cake from Niger Canard? Also noting, too, that another factor that lured the U.S. into Iraq was apparent disinformation, which the Defense Intelligence Agency said was disinformation, alleging that Saddam was collaborating with Al-Qaeda. Now, in fact, they were not collaborating on an operational basis, but as I've indicated, there was a doomsday scenario devised between Al-Qaeda and Iraq if the U.S. was to knock off Iraq, Al-Qaeda would get WMD instructions from Saddam to be used as a backup unit, a doomsday backup unit, if the United States knocked out Saddam. Well, of course, exactly such a doomsday scenario happened, and it appears that Al-Qaeda elements helped to lure the U.S. into what I think is a death trap under the circumstances. San Francisco Chronicle, Wednesday, November 9th of 2005, carried a column by Robert Scheer, who, by the way, has now been fired as a syndicated columnist by the L.A. Times. This is called Lying with Intelligence. Who in the White House knew about DITSUM number 04402, and when did they know it? That's the newly declassified smoking gun document, originally prepared by the Defense Intelligence Agency in February of 2002, but ignored by President Bush. Its declassification last weekend blows another huge hole in Bush's claim that he was acting on the best intelligence available when he pitched the invasion of Iraq as a way to prevent an Al-Qaeda terrorist attack using weapons of mass destruction. The report demolished the credibility of the key al-Qaeda informant the administration relied on to make its claim that a working alliance existed between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. It was circulated widely within the federal government a full 8 months before Bush used the prisoner's lies to argue for an invasion of Iraq because, quote, "We've learned that Iraq has trained al-Qaeda members in bomb-making and poisons and deadly gases," unquote. Parenthetically, there may have been a nugget of truth to that, but they were doing so as a doomsday scenario, which would only be put into effect if the U.S. knocked out Saddam. Well, of course, that's exactly what happened. Did al-Qaeda help to bring that about, bearing in mind that al-Qaeda, too, wanted to see Saddam, a secular Arabo-fascist, knocked out of there, and then, in fact, al-Qaeda elements have hailed the U.S. for doing exactly that. Al-Qaeda senior military trainer Ibn al-Shayak al-Libi, a Libyan captured in Pakistan in 2001, was probably, quote, "intentionally misleading the debriefers," unquote, the DIA report concluded in one of two paragraphs declassified at the request of Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, and released by his office over the weekend. The report also said, quote, "Ibn al-Shayak has been undergoing debriefings for several weeks, and may be describing scenarios to the debriefers that he knows will retain their interest," unquote. He got that right. Folks in the highest places were very interested in claims along the lines Libby was peddling, even though they went against both logic and the preponderance of intelligence gathered to that point about possible collaboration between two enemies of the United States that were fundamentally at odds with each other. Al-Qaeda was able to create a base in Iraq only after the U.S. overthrow of Hussein, not before. Quote, "Saddam's regime is intensely secular and is wary of Islamic revolutionary movements," unquote, accurately noted the DIA. Yet Bush used the informant's already discredited tall tale in his key October 7, 2002 speech, just before the Senate voted on whether to authorize the use of force in Iraq, and again in two speeches in February 2003, leading just before the invasion. Again, was this trap intended not only to get access to some WMD information, but also to lure the U.S. into knocking out an enemy of al-Qaeda and then replacing that enemy with basically an al-Qaeda base in Iraq? That's basically what has happened. And bear in mind that there was a relationship between Saddam and al-Qaeda, but only a doomsday scenario, which that disinformation, among others, helped to precipitate. Okay? Again, obviously the scope of this broadcast is enormous, and to really get the most out of it, you're going to have to do a little homework. I've made that very possible with a tremendous amount of information on the web. Access the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and the vast resources available there, the lectures that are available for download for free, the links to the WFMU websites. WFMU will podcast For the Record to you, and the other websites with a blog sphere for the Record, the website featuring the declassified government documents about the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry, the search function, also now some wonderful, wonderful books. If some of the things that I talk about in connection with the Underground Reich sound preposterous, well, now you can not only access a very compact file of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, but companion volumes such as Germany's Master Plan by Borken and Welch, The Nazis Go Underground, Cairo to Damascus, All Honorable Men by James Stewart Martin, the Tetons text I alluded to earlier, all available for download for free. So please utilize the Spitfire website and its linked websites and encourage others to do so as well. By the way, one of the things on the Spitfire website is a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. If you don't like what you see, there's no better way of fighting back than supporting the work that I'm doing. That concludes For the Record Program 535, Death Trap Part 3, Italian Fascism, Bogus Intelligence in the Iraq War. This has been recorded on November 20th of 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.